You are listening to Fees Always Win, where it's not just the name, but a notice to read your invoices. They add up.
That's my money.
Man, money ain't got no owners. Only spenders.
What's a rip?
A rip, commission. That's why we work here.
You make huge rips.
No, I still don't know how it works.
But you and me, the brokers, right, we're taking home cold hard cash via commission.
Right.
No matter whether our clients make money or lose money, Duke and Duke get the commissions.
The only thing we don't know is your fee.
My fee is the free market. And you're part of it.
Article. Did you see this one about the hackers broke into the SEC database and made millions from inside information?
Dude, these articles, it's almost unbelievable, some of these articles. But yes, I did see that.
So this is from CNBC, published the 15th of January. And they state that federal prosecutors unveiled charges against seven individuals on Tuesday the 15th in an international stock trading scheme that involved hacking into SEC corporate filing databases. Because the corporate filings have to be submitted prior to the publishing of those files, if you know 3 days ahead that an organization, their filings are not going to be good, then you're able to capitalize off of it. Think of the movie Trading Places. If you're in the audience and you're unsure where that connection is, think of them thinking where the orange futures are. They thought they had inside information that they were able to manipulate. In fact, they did not have it. And Eddie Murphy's character, Randolph, had that information. He was able to manipulate it and get them to take away their seat from the New York Stock Exchange as they put all of their money in options. They put a bet that that result was going to be better. And we'll kind of go over puts in a little bit, but they placed the put and they got washed because they owed all that money.
Let me ask you this. The Trading Places reference fits perfectly with that article, but there's another article that you sent, and I really wanted to discuss it with you. Because it's mind-blowing to me. I just want to see how you feel about it regarding Facebook and the percentages of potential fake accounts.
Yeah, let's get into that. Plainsight issues a report claiming that up to 50% of Facebook users are fake. That Facebook has been lying to the public about the scale of its problem with fake accounts, which likely exceeds 50% of the network. Its official metrics, many of which have stopped reporting quarterly, are self-contradictory and some that are even farcical. The company has lost control of its own product. This comes from Plainsight. While Twitter is down from its 52-week high of $47.79, currently trading at $32.90, Jack Dorsey and the executive team has been focused on verifying their non-bot active user registration count. On July 12th of 2018, Twitter had a massive purge of accounts, disabling more than 70 million accounts and what amounts to more than 21% of their remaining registered accounts. It is part of a broad strategy to protect the platform from liability and scrutiny based on disinformation campaigns that some attribute to the 2016 election results. June 14th, Twitter stock symbol TWTR hit $47.79. 6 weeks later, the stock price was down $31.87, and 4 months later, the stock price was down 49% from its high. Now up 65% from their 52-week low that closed at that $39.90, which we mentioned. Twitter is now poised to avoid criticism. Facebook and could be representative of a short case study on the effect of management outlook and performance expectations. When Jack Dorsey essentially told advertisers in July their exposure opportunity was limited and not equal to actual registered accounts, expected earnings per share decreased because advertising dollars did. Now that a new floor has been set and their expected earnings per share, which is able to be used for positive guidance resulting from advertisers, because the advertisers trust the data more than they used to, they're willing to reinvest in Twitter. And before anyone says anything of what's plainsight.com, it's a Stanford Law School supported database that houses more than 2.25 million federal court documents, records on 500,000 lawyers and 500,000 legal entities, including over 100,000 law firms, thousands of federal judges, numerous federal and state statutes and regulations, with the goal of letting ordinary citizens impact the lawmaking process. So it's a reputable source, and this is an absolute damning indictment of Facebook's marketing strategy.
It shows the drastic difference between Facebook and Twitter. But just speaking on a personal level, when dealing with Facebook, you see fake accounts pop up all the time now. It's almost commonplace. I had somebody send me a message recently about an account that they got a message from me. And I mean, with all the different quizzes and different things that you can access and get results from, I mean, I'm not saying that it's the cause. Hell, I don't know the cause, but it's getting to the point now where I don't necessarily know the benefit of Facebook compared to what it used to be back when you had to have the EDU email, because if more than half of the accounts are fake, you have no idea who you're dealing with. And Facebook took a hit before regarding your election and how that was impacted. But think about all that information out there, or misinformation, or the ability to influence not just elections, but to influence people's lives in general. Like, that's the new way of espionage, basically.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to the SEC story that people are always wondering the impact of cybersecurity, and this is one of it. One, you can't set pricing correctly if there lacks cybersecurity, but if that information is just wrong, one, Facebook probably has a lawsuit coming on its way, and two, the value of the stock's going to have to fall, because why would an advertiser, let's say Coca-Cola, spend $100,000 for their Facebook buy because Facebook told them there's 300 million users when actually there's 150 million users. That should lower the amount, and I feel like is a justifiable point when spending advertisement on that platform.
And I like that you cover that we have the Twitter side of it as well, because Twitter seems to have actively tried to do something about the issue versus Facebook. We haven't really seen anything being done. And me personally, I mean, I know I'm in a older generation. Younger generation, Facebook isn't really what they go to. But if Facebook is getting hacked, it's only going to go to other sites. It's going to go to Instagram and all the other sites that people are using, because that's the wave of the future. That's the way that you can affect people, how they think and how they interact. So that, like, we talk about the Cold War from the 90s. This is the interactive war, basically. I mean, because the power that you can have on impacting people from fake accounts or accessing their information, I mean, that's scary. It's like an episode of Black Mirror almost.
And we realize Facebook, the timing of this article is interesting because they report their quarter four earnings on the 30th. So once again, another company reporting for Thursday. With this information coming out, this might not affect the fourth quarter since this didn't come out until the first. But I would be looking at what they set their expectations at, because prior to this news, they anticipated earnings almost growing at more than a 60% clip than it did the prior quarter. But also, I feel like this goes back to Class A and Class B shares that we discussed in the earlier episode. If Sheryl Sandberg and Mark Zuckerberg didn't have so much control of the voting decisions of this organization, is this something that shareholders could have prevented by demanding accountability earlier?
I mean, my question is, because I still use Facebook, but moving forward, like you said, it's going to impact them, because you're telling these companies that are paying you for advertising or whatever else that you have this certain number of people on your site, and it's just almost less than half. Like you said, that's a lawsuit. Like, and the fact that you've lost control of your site, you've lost control of your content at this point. And if you're in a situation where you can't possibly track all the fake accounts you have over 52% of fake accounts. I mean, eventually, and other companies have tried, but they've done it unsuccessfully. There's gonna be a company that comes with stricter protocols that can take its place, where they can potentially have safer means for you to provide your information. Because that over 52%, that's an astronomical number to me. Like 5% is too high in my opinion, but over 52%, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, the sheer gap of that number and the fact they haven't addressed this at all is concerning. And I wonder, is there a coincidence? This week, we received notice for our Facebook group page. Once again, if you're listening to the show, you're on Facebook, you've liked our business page, please like our group page. I accidentally set up the business page. That wasn't the intent. I don't want money from y'all. I don't want to send y'all advertisement. The group page, we just really want to build a community. And Facebook is just where we're hosting it right now. But I do find it interesting that they sent a notice this week saying, here's free $5 in advertising to boost your post. Was that because they knew this news was coming out, or was that just a scheduled post that already existed? We might never know, but it makes me think.
It makes me think too. And it makes me think toward the first option, because that's really going to impact them moving forward. Cause that's such a huge number. But, and then, I don't know, because yes, people who are in the know would read the story, but a lot of people will just shrug this off as fake news, or they won't take it seriously. So there's that aspect of it too. But like you said, the site is an accredited site. This isn't something where they're just making these numbers up. They have to put research into these figures to come up with the information. It's not like people just got together and decided to troll. This is factual information, and hopefully people take this and consider it when they're using these social sites.
Or at least using it for your business purposes. Because you should be using this to negotiate with Facebook if that's a primary advertising vehicle for you.
Yeah, because it's a big difference to say we have 300 million and you only have 150, whatever the number is. Like, it's not even half, but more than half.
Or my contention is, even looking at the micro aspect of it, if I'm an insurance agent and they tell me I could boost it to 5,000 customers that are between the age of 35 and 45 and own one recreational line vehicle, 5,000, awesome. I get a couple hits back. I make my money back for that $5 boost. But now it makes you question, is that really only 2,000 real accounts and the other 3,000 are made up by Facebook or Russian bots that say they own a recreational line vehicle? Those are the concerns here, that it's just not on the huge marketing level of ball in the family. This is for the everyday business owner that has a business page on Facebook and utilizes their marketing to gain new leads. Because that means their cost per lead just went up if it's really an exposure to actual 2,000 people and not 5,000.
How do you think this will impact Facebook moving forward? Like in the next year or two, will we see a dramatic change with Facebook? Will Facebook have the same cachet, or will things just go as scheduled?
I want to see, because the weird part is I haven't seen this from any other source than plain than Stanford. That I didn't see this on MSNBC. I didn't see this on anything else. So I wonder, is this going to come out at their earnings report, and that's going to be something they address, or if they just let it go? I think this could be devastating. That in my mind, I wasn't an active investor at the time, but this is what I imagine happens to Yahoo when they keep throwing out ideas and the stock is going the opposite way as a result.
Yeah, I agree with the, that's probably what's going to happen around the time when they unveil the earnings. That's when this is going to become more of a news story, I guess, because that's typically how things go. I hate to link it to sports, but it's almost like the athlete about to get drafted. And that one tweet or that one photo that's damning all of a sudden gets released. But we'll see.
Yeah.
It can be devastating, though. That's a good point.
Don't be surprised if Facebook, as they have a lot of liquidity, that they have a lot of just cash on hand that they've had nothing to do with. Facebook, even without this news, was probably at their maximum account capacity, that for every 100 people they signed up, there's 100 people that signed up in college and stopped checking their accounts on a regular basis. So that being said, with that information in hand, expect them to go out and make a big announcement of something they're buying, whether it's like an online marketplace or unveiling a new feature for engagement purposes. They have to spend some of that money now before it magically disappears with the stock price going down. So that's what I'll be most interested in.
Yeah, and it serves as a conversation changer too. Like, instead of everybody focusing on this, they can switch. Well, in their hope, they will switch and focus on whatever that news is. That's a fair point. I didn't think about that, but that makes sense.
And so I guess in the last concept, let's go with other things not hitting expectations. It's almost that time of year. And what time of year, you ask? Billions time. It comes back 1 month later every year. So the first year, I think it was January, then it was February, last year it was March. This year it shows back up in April, and we will be watching how Axe Capital does, as well as Taylor, if the quant box Taylor developed is able to make money. But interesting articles, there's a summary of two of these articles. One, CNN indicates, this was an article from the 25th, that hedge fund assets has plunged by $88 billion in 2018. And that's just a nice way of saying they have $88 billion less to invest than they used to. That's not a small number. That's more money than Jeff Bezos' wife is going to get in this divorce.
$88 billion. It's funny when we talk about a lot of these stories, we just throw out figures, and you know, it just comes out of our mouth, and then we keep going. But I don't think we ever just sit back and think about all the money that's just going out. $88 billion. $1 billion. I don't think we appreciate that, but $88 billion, that is.
And so I'm trying to think.
Astronomical amount of money.
So the best way I could describe that for the audience, think, right in 2017, it's estimated that the Earth has 7.53 billion people. There's more people alive right now than lived in between the beginning of time and like the 1900s. There's more people walking the Earth right now. Think of 11 times that amount, and you're still not at $88 billion.
See, stories like this make me wonder what I've done with my life, that there's money out here, and there are people, I'm not saying they're just walking around with $88 billion, but there's somebody that's close. There's some people that's at that level. And we talk about money, like people think $1 million is a lot of money. What's $1 million to somebody who is thinking about $88 billion? It's just a completely different discussion in general. Like, it should change your perspective. Whatever your perspective is when it comes to money, there's always going to be somebody with more of it and with more ways to have resources to get to it.
It's really almost impossible to conceptualize that. You're right. It's just a number. Like, nobody's ever touched a physical $88 billion. They're just numbers in a system.
I mean, it.
Like Jeff Bezos can't call the Treasury and be like, I need my 88 cashed out in cash and roll it in my house.
I'm going to the strip club with 88 billions in ones. Can you imagine? Oh, my.
Like goodness. You're going to be there for like 20 lifetimes.
Oh, my goodness. Like, to even count to a billion would take a number of years. So imagine having to count to 88 billion. I don't think it's possible.
Yeah, mind-blowing. But not only that, this other article comes from Bloomberg, and it's an opinion piece published on the 19th, that quants aren't adding up. So if you're a fan of billions, you'll remember the character, the non-binary character, Taylor. Their investment is more they're building a system that could just code and make sure that, hey, we know that our system's going to beep because they don't have human emotion. What this is finding is black box investing strategies supposedly based on rocket science are vulnerable to a host of inherent biases, which are now being exposed. When they say biases, yes, it's not a human making the ultimate decision, but it is a human that programmed it. And you could only program it with things that you think. Their summary at the end. The reality is any fund managers possessing a magic investment formula guaranteeing low risk, high returns would have no incentive to share the secret. Successful firms such as Renaissance Technologies have closed some funds to outside investors, preferring to capture the return for themselves. As legendary investor Paul Tudor Jones once noted, if there was an easy formula to follow, then all investors would already be rich. So just because you're not in a fund doesn't mean that the fund's naturally going to do well, but just because it's new doesn't mean it's going to be great, which I think is the summary here.
All right. I'm just going back to the part about the flaw being in the person. And that's the human element of anything. Even though we're programming a computer and the computer is going to be flawless, the programmer and the information being placed into it might have a bias. It might not be a noticeable bias, but over time, when they start tracking why things are going the way they are, they'll find it. So that's something I never even thought about, but that's a good point, Chris.
Yeah, which fund manager Einhorn explains why he lost more than 30% last year and nothing went right.
Yeah, these stories are a lot of people that are experiencing a lot of losses. Is it Einhorn?
I think it's Einhorn. Apologize if I pronounce that correctly. Anyone in the audience who knows the correct enunciation, but I assume it's Einhorn based on the spelling.
We will. Hey man, we hoping for the best. David Einhorn explains in a letter why his hedge fund lost more than a third of their value last year. Greenlight Capital lost 11.4% in the fourth quarter, bringing its decline to 34.2% in 2018. Wow. He also decided to reopen his funds to new investments, a move not seen since 2014. I just got to reflect. In 2018, he declined 34.2%. Good God. Reflecting on his worst year ever, All-star hedge fund manager David Einhorn explained in a letter to investors why his hedge funds lost more than a third of their value last year. Einhorn, I keep messing up the dude's name, David, I'm just going to call him David, said the losses have forced him to reopen the funds for new investments, a move not seen since 2014, like I said before. Nothing went right for the entire year, Einhorn said in a letter to investors. In 2018, the losses were a mile wide and a yard deep. It's much easier to explain results when they're driven by large moves in a few names. It's much harder when the answer is a lot of everything. But today, it feels more like a combination of a few where we're wrong, a difficult environment for value investing, and a lot of adverse variance. Einhorn's collapse came in a dismal year where stocks and other risk assets took a hit from the ongoing trade battles and slowing global growth. However, Einhorn's hedge funds underperformed the market drastically. The S&P 500 ended 2018 down just 6%. his funds have been lackluster since 2015 when they lost more than 20%. They returned 7% in 2016 and 1.5% in 2017. The underperformance in 2018 has inevitably led to substantial redemptions, which forced Einhorn to reopen the funds to gain additional capital. Einhorn had not allowed new investments in 4 years. At this point, we no longer believe there's a risk of our assets growing too quickly, other than through improved performance. For those interested in investing, the answer will now be yes, Einhorn said. The downturn sharply contrasts with Einhorn's early years, when he scored some of Wall Street's best returns, including 24% in 2016, 32% in 2019. In 2019, that was during an economic downturn, wasn't it, Chris?
Not technically. Like, the market didn't perform at the same rate, but... Well, no, you're right. We did finish the year in a bear market, that it was down than it was the beginning of the year. So, never mind my prior statement. You're right.
So, I can see why they felt that way about him. He had 32% in 2009. Einhorn also made the most precise call of the entire financial crisis, the collapse of Lehman Brothers. In the letter, Einhorn also reviewed his current positions that are 5% or larger, saying they should all do better in 2019. Greenlight's current long positions include General Motors, insurer Bright House Financial, and home builder Green Brick Partners, which all struggled in 2018, bleeding as much as 47%. Einhorn is also shorting Tesla, saying the electric car market is in such a bizarre situation and his estimates are optimistic. The hedge fund manager is also using gold as a hedge against imprudent global fiscal and monetary policies, as the national debt has ballooned to more than $2 trillion under the current administration. We're talking about $88 billion. $2 trillion. That's a whole other level. When the economy eventually slows, deficit is sure to expand rapidly, possibly catastrophically. The politicians say deficits don't matter. History says otherwise, Einhorn said. His farm also has a bit of a macro hedge in case the politicians and central bankers continue to act irresponsibly, which seems like a safe bet. He added, Einhorn did not disclose what the hedge was. So this is the man, 2008, 2009, he was flying high. He was bringing people up to 32%. But he lost 34.2%. Wow. I mean, we've seen people lose a lot of money. We've seen a lot of falls. But based on this article, it wasn't just 2018. I mean, from 2015 through 2018, he's had a couple of bad years. It's not just 1 year, but the past 3 years haven't been that kind to him.
You're absolutely... And when we come to hedging, I'm still wrapping my head around, like, your hedges just means things that are protecting your overall fund. So if you think the market is going to do better than everyone else says it is, you're going to place a bet out there, a put. You're buying an option. And so that's the same as the person, a trader who sold 1,900 put options on the S&P 500, obligate them to buy the benchmark at $2,100 on December 18, 2020. He's saying that the market's going to be better. If the market's worse, he's going to lose a lot of money. So that's hedging. He's saying that I think it's going to be better than everybody else, so I can bet on other things since I know this money's going to come in. It's also hedging to say, instead of staying liquid, we're going to buy gold, because if the rest of the economies in the world go down, I'm able to still make money because gold's going up 5% versus the economy going down, net profit 7%. Once again, a hedge. But I guess when you're betting so much, it could go quick bad. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think it's interesting how they ended the article. Like, they're saying he has a secret plan, the secret fail-safe that he's not disclosing to anybody. But just in case things go bad, he has a fail-safe to fall back on. I mean, maybe that is not only there to make him look like he's going to have a nice turnaround, but also to give hope to people who still have faith in him. But at this point, what was the number? 32%.
Yeah, 32. But doesn't that go back to the last article in which they said, if there's a single easy formula to follow, all investors would already be rich. And as a firm, he has to say he has something in the bank, as people are already pulling their money out at historic rates. He's opened up for investing. He has to say, hey, this year, I know I lost 32 last year. This year, we're going to make money, so invest in me. He has to pitch him.
Yeah, he has to, but I hope people are able to see what he's doing and not just saying, you know what? He's going to bring us back to the 2008, 2009 years. He actually may do it. He very well may have a complete turnaround. But, I mean, tracking that history, I will be hesitant to go all in 2019.
Well, I think 2009, it sounds like he also made his money off of the market failing. That he said, yeah, I know this company's going to be bad. All y'all say it's going to be good, so I bet you it won't. So I was able to get more money than y'all in it. And it's the same concept as, now I'm forgetting the stock movie that had Brad Pitt as well as Michael from
The Big Short.
The Big Short, that they shorted the stocks. They bet against the market and they won when it goes down. And it sounds like that's where a lot of his strength is, that he could see failure, but he couldn't participate in this market. That was just growth. I guess he was betting too much on failure, and he lost his shirt last year.
And based on the article, I mean, they do talk about us being in what, more than $2 trillion in debt with the new administration. Maybe that's his plan again. The same thing as the 2008-2009 economic downturn. Maybe he thinks that we're headed in a similar fashion, and maybe that's what his fail-safe is, but I don't know.
Well, when you have – because this week was Davos. The president of the U.S. didn't go because we were in the middle of a shutdown. The IMF – so Davos and IMF warned of a slowing world economy. Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan indicated the same. There are also some other hedge fund managers. It looks like everybody is anticipating a bear market and a severe recession. Whether it's triggered by the U.S. or not does not seem to be the precipice for it, as this is the World Bank that you hear China slowing down. And if China's slowing down, that means investments in Africa and South America are going to slow down dramatically. And you see Brexit, which is Britain, which is a major market, the UK, if they slow down dramatically, that affects a bunch of countries. You're right. This might be the bet that he's seeing 2008 just happening all over again 11 years later instead of 10 years later, which is crazy to think in 10 years, that swing.
That's also scary to think, I mean, because as China goes, that basically kind of sets how everything else goes. But I really hope and pray that isn't the case, although all indications show that that's where we're headed. But, man, I remember living through that time in life, and that's not a time I want to see anytime soon, not just with the housing market and all of that, but just the government shutdown was bad enough. It was how many days was it, over 30?
Yeah, I think it finished at 31 or 32 days.
Yeah, the going through an economic downturn, that takes a lot longer than 30 to 40 days to come out of. And I really hope that's not where we're headed. Although, based on what you're saying, based on what we're reading, based on what all indicators would say otherwise, but I really hope that's not the case.
Well, I'll leave it here, and we can talk about options in further detail, especially as we get into Billion Season 1 and Season 2 and Season 3 review, probably doing a Big Short review. We're going to continue having more conversations on options. I want to leave it. I found this on Reddit and MarketWatch. Everybody else is doing it. Trader says he has no money at risk, then promptly loses $2,000. So this comes from an account on Reddit. The username is The anonymous trader internet hero created a stir on Reddit this month with an absolute corker of a trade, which was identified by him. It's called a box spread, a four-sided option strategy built in theory as riskless arbitrage play using calls, put options. In this case, it started with $5,000 investment executed through Robinhood, a no-commission-based platform. Based on the options guy detailing it, it says Iron Man figured that it was a slam dunk. He states, "I have no money at risk." He responded to questions in his approach on Reddit's Rosh's Wall Street Bets group. This literally cannot go tits up. That's a quote. Famous last words. Even one of the group moderators pleaded, "Do not do this," pointing out the potential downside, but that didn't stop Irony Man. In fact, he apparently managed to withdraw $10,000 before it all hit the fan, and hit the fan it did. A few days and some unforeseen twists later, he shared the results, a negative $57,989.57 account on Robinhood, which was closed immediately. So almost 58,000 in losses. The account gets shut down. This debacle was red meat for Wall Street's bets, and the meme pulled in.
Wait, Chris, can you say that number again? Can you say the number one more time, please? Negative what?
Negative $57,989.57 off of a $5,000 investment that he pulled $10,000 out of before they closed his account. So he's actually down, I would say, probably another $67,000 since he pulled $10,000 out.
Oh my God.
And so this is what it explains in simple terms. One Reddit user, I tried to break it down. He bought four different types of options. I gave him a $300,000 line of credit. At the end of expiration, like 2 years from now, he would have collected 40 or 50 grand. The way he bought it was set up like a hedge, so it didn't matter if the stock went up or down because he had options that covered him no matter what. But then 283 of those options were exercised by the guy on the other end of the trade, meaning he had to come up with 28,300 shares of the stock, which he didn't have. I guess then Robinhood took the liberty of exercising his call options to pay for those options I got exercised from him. Then it was just a whole S show after that. So what happens when you make a call or you're trying to make a short? You're borrowing money for a bet that you think you're going to profit off of from the borrowed money. If that date is set on the borrowed money, the person could come back for that money whenever. You won't get paid for 2 years if it works out perfectly and no one asks for their money back. But if they do ask for their money back, then you have to come up with all those shares. And if you haven't made a profit, you have no way of paying the bank or the mortgage broker, which is Robinhood at this time, the money you owe for those trades. This is how a person on Robinhood could lose their shirt, which is why I don't play options, because Jim Cramer tells you that's how he kind of went crazy and lost his shirt. And this is how someone as big as David Einhorn could lose his shirt. As soon as somebody calls you on your bluff or on the table, they can come and get their money anytime. And what could amount in 34.2% in 2018.
And I apologize, but how long did it take for him to have that type of loss? How many days? How many hours?
This happened like within a week.
Oh my God.
and I will say Wall Street Bets is not the community to be in to tell you not to do something. So I do say consider that, because it's a place you see a lot of posts of, "Hey, I lost 10,000. I'm out of the options market for now. I'll be back in 2 years." Because if it doesn't work out right, then it's not going to work. But that's what makes things like Billion so good, where he's like, "Well, I put my money over here, so if this happens, I'm okay. But if this also happens, I'm okay. So regardless, minimum, I'm going to make 2%. Max, I'm going to make 30% if Dollar Bill Stern came up with the crazy idea."
That is amazing to me. Like, wow. I mean, we've read a bunch of different stories, but that story by far, because somebody actually begged him, don't do this. And he's going to reflect, and it's like, I should have listened. But you know what? He wanted to be right, I guess, and wait 2 years to reap the benefit, if it would have worked. Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
But, well, thank you for joining us. We've been on for 3 hours, though you're probably going to get three episodes over a two-hour period because my computer went down, the network went down, something went down. I just don't have an IT department but myself, so I don't have the complete answer. But thank you for joining us for this episode of Fees Always Win. It's always good to have the co-host back. Without him, it's just a monologue. With him, it's a discussion. And I always appreciate the time, the effort, and his research that he brings to the table and the articles he brings to my attentions are just the different ways of thinking about it. I just want to reiterate that for the audience, that this is more of a passion project than anything. We're just looking to educate ourselves, so when we're 70, we could tell our grandkids and our children, hey, this is a little extra way to protect yourself.
Well, Chris, as the brain trust, and if I'm the scion of the Delta, you are most definitely the wise sage when it comes to everything investing. So we really did a bunch today. We got like a lot of content, but it's been a pleasure. Throughout all of the craziness that was today, we got it done, man. Good job, sir.
It is a pleasure, and I want to leave the audience with one thing, a recommendation. If you're looking to buy a home, if you're a second-time home buyer, if you're a first-time home buyer especially, there's a network out there. It's an all-black podcast network called Movie Trailer Reviews, MTR. They have a show on there that they just started this week. One of their hosts, D-Palm, is also a mortgage processor and mortgage broker. They have about a 1 hour and 20-minute episode on mortgages and understanding the mortgage, the process, especially for first-time home buyers.
Yeah, Chris, that's good information for the viewers. That's good information for me as well, because we're planning on moving into a house also, so we're looking out.
The opinions expressed on the show do not reflect the thoughts of our respective employers, family, or podcast network. We are not licensed by the FTC or SEC. Before acting on information on the website or from the show, you should consider whether it's suitable for your particular circumstance and seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor. To everyone.